Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Marcus from Gen Con TV, and we are back with a new episode of Fireside with Peter Adkisson, where the founder of Wizards of the Coast himself takes us on a trip through the untold history of Dungeons & Dragons with special guests from the game's illustrious past. In today's episode, Peter and co-host Emma Larkins are joined by graphic designer, art director, and current senior AD on the world-building team for Magic the Gathering, Don Mirren. So without further ado, we'll drop you right into the conversation.
Our guest today, she's got stories. I'm sure of it, because I know she's wonderful. Don,
no pressure.
No pressure. Don, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Best stories you've ever heard.
The best stories. She's got great.
Thank you.
I'm laughing because you're the only guest I've had on the show that I didn't have a prep call with. We chatted a few minutes before this, but usually I have a phone call, sit down, talk for like, I go through all this stuff like that. And it's like, we'll just wing it. You were busy.
You're really busy.
Yeah, busy. Okay.
And, you know, we know each other.
Yeah, we know each other. So I didn't really say what you are, what you did. You've been the art director. Is that the right thing? Art director for TSR since 1948? No. Ever, a long time.
Show?
I know. No, not at all.
You look lovely.
You look fantastic.
I became art director shortly before...
Well, let's cover it as we go.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just trying to... You've been in the world of art and graphic design.
Second edition, third edition, 3.5.
And stuff. So that's the highlight, the overview. Mm-hmm. So let's tell your life story. So how did you learn the skills to do this? Did you go to art school or something?
Oh, geez. You know, it's funny because we actually talk about this at work. There is no school for... art direction. There really isn't. You know, and art direction can be so many different things. You know, I am an art director on the Magic creative team. You know, we the Magic world building team.
Right.
You know, so we're a team of art directors and writers that, you know, build the worlds that you know and love in the Magic sets. You know,
right,
every new
right.
world has right. an art lead right. and a writing right. lead to figure out what does it look like, what's the new hook.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to be exciting for players.
So you didn't go to school? Or
I did go to school. I did go to school, but not for that at all. Because, again, there's no school for art direction. There's art schools. But, you know, my parents strongly discouraged that. So I spent a few years at University of Illinois.
Because you were from Chicago, right?
Yeah. You know, trying something different every semester because I, you know.
You wanted to do art. And
right. And so not being able to do it in school, I just started doing it, you know, like so many of my generation, just side hustles. You know,
I would do
fanzines for people or their cassette covers, you know, for their demo tapes.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So when you say you did them, you illustrated them?
Yeah,
you
designed them, illustrated them, yeah. You know, I did a lot of things. Like I was doing these really dumb paintings for people in the dorms, just it was, you know, at that time it was the 80s, just splashing paint on a large canvas, and people wanted to pay me
interpretation
for these. You know, would you do it in my sortie colors? Like, oh, okay,
right.
So I just started doing it.
You started doing art.
Yeah.
You started doing art.
Yeah.
And then...
One t-shirt company. We did custom painted t-shirts.
Okay.
And we did anything from... people wanted album covers.
Were you in silk screening then? Were you involved
And silk screening, yeah. Mm-hmm. Doing both.
Right.
That was a lot of fun, actually.
Right. Okay, and so you... and then... How did this lead you up to just before you got hired at TSR? You started a business doing this, didn't you, or something?
Well, I worked at various screen printing companies, and at one point, one of my roommates and I were running a shop out of the basement, which was probably not legal.
What kind of shop was it? I thought we were doing graphic
just
design.
Just for, like, you know, building codes, because we lived in this really old,
codes.
Really old
zoning
farmhouse.
Restrictions. Don't worry about that.
Big
stuff.
Belt yeah. printer.
Oh,
you
wow.
know,
yeah.
yeah, we had a big ass belt printer in the. Oops, there's a swear. This big ass belt printer down there, you know, with like a socket.
Right.
So it wasn't super safe. The basement would flood and
a few deaths were involved.
Not that I know of. Yeah, so I was, you know, had been doing that on my own as well and was considering maybe taking that a little more seriously. And then I ended up getting a job at TSR because they needed, at that time in the early 90s, publishing was transitioning from, you know, everything was on a board.
Okay, so slow down here a little bit, Satan. So in terms of getting, how did the opportunity to work at TSR come along? How did this, I mean.
It sounds like a story.
You didn't, I mean, I always like to hear how people get uh-huh. hired at game companies because it's usually not, well, there was a job posting I sent
yeah,
in my
yeah,
resume.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
that
yeah,
is
no.
rarely the story.
No. There was no internet back then.
Mm. Right.
Right. So, yeah, and I was in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. And, of course, TSR was in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, actually, it was my ex.
Okay. Ex. That's a good start. All right. You know, there's a technique in role-playing called the X card, you know? We're like, we don't want to talk about this. You just say X card, and we can just X move card. Right along.
X card, yeah. On again, off again, on again, off again. Yeah, was... pushing for on again,
yeah.
basically, mm-hmm. and coincidentally, TSR was needed someone who knew how to, who's a graphic designer that also knew how to use a computer.
Mm.
Oh,
yeah,
because you know they were kind of a new thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what year? 1990.
92.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're looking for somebody. They're looking for graphic designers that could work on desktop.
Right, because the company sort of. Had to transition. You know, I mean, you think about cartography. You know, those were like big yeah. hand-drawn
right.
maps. Everything that's digital now.
Yeah.
Typesetting.
Right.
Layouts, packaging design. Most illustrators, although. Todd, you know, obviously there's still people that work traditionally, but fewer and fewer, although now they know they can sell their paintings.
Yeah,
so now people want to
Todd
paint
Lockwood
again.
Todd Lockwood was explaining this yes. to us last week. So
it's
no,
like the pendulum.
I've gone back to oil painting
yeah,
because
yeah.
I can sell the originals. Like, oh,
yep, yep.
awesome.
It's interesting, yeah, because, you know, Todd was, you know, we were there at the same time where, you know, where the industry was just transitioning and you had to transition with it, right?
So did you start using right. computers in relation to the screen printing? Or to
yes.
the... Okay.
Yeah. We would just do, you know, they didn't do much back then.
Yeah.
So, but we would use them for, you know, instead of like hand drawing, you know, perfect collegiate letters in a perfect arc,
right.
you could save a lot of time by just like tick and curving it,
right.
printing it out and making your screens as opposed to hand drawing
right.
that. So,
yeah.
but I mean, I know how to cut rubellith. I know how to French curve your way around. Like it's nobody's business.
I know what that means.
See?
Explain that a little bit. I think that
just
this is good stuff.
Like, these are design tools that just aren't used anymore.
But
like,
was,
you know, what a triangle is to get a perfect right angle.
Okay.
There's things called French curves.
Right.
That are just all the same things. They're just templates.
Like a guide. Like
to help you draw okay. a perfect, smooth
circle.
Or curve. Or... You know, and the French curves are all different shapes to try to accommodate
oh.
every possible or arc that you might have to draw.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you'd lay them out. Like, so this is all about doing everything tactile. You'd lay out, you'd have a page, say, like a cover.
You're maybe, talking about screen
or
printing
a book,
now?
Or I'm not really sure.
So,
but
yeah.
making it, it's TSR, right?
Yeah.
You're
yeah. So, well,
making
actually,
a role playing book,
yeah.
right?
Well, so, oh, Jesus. So the French curves were used more for the screen printing, and that's what the computer started to replace because it was just simpler.
Okay.
Then, you know, this is pre, you know, before InDesign, there was Quark.
Yep.
And before Quark, there was Word something.
Yeah.
Which was just awful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you wanted to set type, you know, you couldn't. Yeah. There was just nothing. It was basically a dumber version of Word.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Word Perfect? Is that what it was
yes,
called?
Yes, there was a Word Perfect.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. See.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. So you got hired by TSR to do to help bring TSR into the 90s,
the digital age.
Mm. And so what? What did you do?
Like Photoshop did not have layers.
Oh my gosh.
No. There are no layers.
No layers of Photoshop.
You know, your maximum file size was like 32 megs, and that was 8 by 12, 8.5 by 11, right? And so if you wanted to save, you had to save, literally save a version of every time you did something, save another copy. In order to save iterations or, you know, if you wanted to backtrack to something, no layers, no layer effects, shit, warp tools,
So you came onto TSR, they helped you. What do you remember what product you worked on? Like what were you doing, product or ads or
at TSR?
Yeah, at TSR. When you started at TSR.
I remember
First of all, how was that too? Like who'd you get? You go through an interview process? Or?
Yes, I was interviewed. I was interviewed by the woman that ran that digital publishing department.
Mm-hmm.
And what I actually did was I spent like half my day down in that department and half my day up in the traditional art department.
Okay.
Where things were still being done by hand. And running a stat camera, a big old stat camera.
Right, sure. Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you needed a mock-up for something, you know, you had to tell a vendor how to, you sent them black and white FPOs and we would make our own rub-on type with this really elaborate, highly toxic process of like, kind of like screen printing of layers of, you know, whatever color you wanted to use, the type, you know, it was really bizarre. And yeah, like I said, very toxic. We would have to take turns because the fumes got pretty bad in that little...
Any lasting effects little... from that? Or no? Everything's...
What? Yeah. So I was spending my time like 50-50 between the two.
Were you a Dungeons & Dragons player before you came on? Were you a gamer? Did you know what you were getting into?
Yes and no. You know, I, no.
And how did your mother feel about this? I mean, she didn't like the fact that you were doing art, but would it come okay if you were doing art for Dungeons & Dragons?
So, see, that's the thing.
Did
you
that
know,
make it better?
In my school, I had some guy friends that played.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, they never invited me, and I never really, you know, took any interest.
Yeah.
But I was interested in fantasy.
Right.
You know, I, at that point, it was already, you know, had read Lord of the Rings, you know, when I was in grade school. So I, you know, the genre, I was totally on board with. I didn't realize that you could actually play it as a game.
Yeah.
Right.
Which
is
like, I mean, now I play all the time.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
good.
So I...
Great.
Well, that's like a lot of people do get into it because people have invited them or people mm-hmm. ask them to play. So if no one asks you to play, you know, it's harder to go out and seek it out on your own if you're not invited into that.
Right, because especially back then, you know, it's like now it seems like, oh, everybody plays D&D, you know, but it was far and few between. Like I said, I think of like, you know, two of my classmates that I know played and that was it.
Yeah.
But so bizarre. So like one Gen Con, I'm at the TSR party and I hear Dawn And I was like, what? And here are Brian Jelke and Dave Knights of the Dinner Table.
Oh, yeah. Dave Kenzer. And Jolly Blackburn.
Yes. I lived in the dorms with those two at U of I.
Oh.
I knew Brian and Dave from the university.
Now, when I went to a dorm school, they had the boys and girls in separate.
Yes. Yeah. But there was a lot of crossover and partying going on.
Okay.
Yeah, they had drilled a hole in the wall of the closet.
Yeah.
And so they could run a beer tap through. So the keg was on the other side of the wall.
Okay. We could tell stories. I used to run a casino out of my dorm room.
See?
Right. Friday night at midnight. It was blackjack and poker.
See?
Yeah. So I made money because my parents were poor. I didn't have enough money, so I had to make my own money.
Brian, he put a slip and slide, I remember, in the dorm. Like, just flooded the hallway.
That's
with
fabulous.
Soap suds. Yeah.
Wow.
So I partied with these guys in college, like, you know, would go see shows or whatever.
Right.
And then, you know, everyone just sort of drifts away.
Yeah.
And then of all the places, of all the times to just like
run into
in the gaming, and we both end up in the gaming industry because Brian was like a nuclear engineering.
Okay.
You know, and I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing, you know, but end up in the same place at the same time was just bizarre.
Okay. So in this period, sort of the midnight, like when do you remember any products you worked on that maybe somebody watching this would identify with? Like any campaign setting?
Planescape.
Oh, so you worked on Planescape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
with
special.
Bomb? Did you work with?
That would have been Dana.
Dana?
Dana Knudsen. Yes. Tony Dieter-Litzy, Rob Ruppel.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I got that mixed up with
Dee Barnett was also a graphic designer. Zeb Cook.
Yes.
And Colin McComb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Tony Dieter-Litzy just had an art opening. Actually, it was last year. Or maybe it was 2 years ago now at this point, at the Norman Rockwell Museum.
Ooh.
They, like, had this full-on retrospect of all his work that was so beautifully put together.
Wow.
Everything he had done for TSR, for Magic,
right.
As a kid.
Right.
It was just, you know, his stuff he's doing now, Wandala, the Jimmy Zhang Wow, you know, everything. And so it was cool because it was almost like a little mini TSR reunion.
Right.
At there, because Colin was there and Zeb was there and Dana and
Zeb
I were
Cook,
there.
Who designed, second edition.
And
D&D.
Yeah, and it was, it was awesome.
So when you were working on these products, because you were hired on as a graphic designer with using computers, were you doing graphic design for the most part to start out with? Or?
When I was upstairs, it was more graphic design in the stat camera. When I was downstairs with the digital stuff, it was really just kind of learning Photoshop and file management, you know, because this was all new stuff at that time.
Yeah.
Right.
So digital production type stuff.
Yes.
And layouts.
Yes, exactly. Because the typesetting was done on CompuGraphic machines. Hmm. Like, you had to tell them if you wanted text to wrap around an illustration, you didn't just like set your bounding box you had to specify, I want the first line to be 16 picas, you know, because you're measuring it, you're literally measuring it. The second line to be 18 picas, the third line to be 29 picas.
It's very elaborate layout too, right? Because you are wrapping text around graphics and positioning the graphics.
And that's why, you know, at the time layouts weren't so elaborate because it was easier just to go flush left, right margins, you know, straight columns. To do that, you know, the typesetters were like, really? You know, now there's just tools to, you know, do those types of things a lot easier.
So So how did you move from that into art direction? Kind of when did that happen? Because I know when you and I met,
uh-huh.
in 90, where this segment of the story is going, mm-hmm. when we meet in 1997, you're the art director. You're in charge.
I was one of the art directors.
Well, one of the art directors.
Yeah, so.
I knew right away, though, that you were the
one
that was in
charge. To be honest,
you know.
Lorraine fired.
The former owner of the company.
The former owner of TSR.
Right.
Fired the three existing art directors.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so myself and Paul Hanchett were suddenly promoted.
Now, was this right before the acquisition? Or like in 97
yeah,
or 96?
96, yeah.
I'm sort of vaguely, I've been told that there were certainly a number of layoffs mm-hmm. and terminations kind of before Wizards got into this.
Yes.
Got involved.
There had been a few rounds, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, she...
okay, so...
All three of them at the same time. And so Paul and I were suddenly promoted. So yeah, I mean, learning on the fly, man.
Yeah.
Right. So you had been doing graphic design and mm-hmm. and the computer stuff, and then all of a sudden, you and Paul are running all the graphic design and art department, which means that you're having to commission art from artists, and you hadn't done that before.
Correct.
Okay. So what was that like? Do you remember like an initial, did you call up somebody like, I don't know, Larry Elmore or somebody and say, I'm your new art director, tell me what to do?
Well, so it was a little different back then because TSR had an art buyer.
An art buyer?
Right.
Okay. I had no idea.
Yeah, Peggy Cooper. So there was a graphic design department.
The name. Okay. Mm.
There's a graphic design department. And then you know, the editors of the whatever RPG release, mm-hmm. you know, they kind of were the ones writing art descriptions.
Okay, the editor, that would be like maybe a Skip Williams or
yeah,
Rich
or
Baker
Zeb.
Or Zeb Cook, mm-hmm. somebody like that. Okay.
But Peggy, you know, they would tell Peggy what they wanted,
right.
and then she would just hire somebody to do it.
Right. But and you also had artists on staff.
And we had artists on staff.
I mean, several really famous artists
yes.
on staff. You had Jeff Easley.
I had Jeff Easley and Brahm.
Brahm.
Rob Ruppel. Dana Knudsen.
Yes.
Paul Jakeways.
Tony Sudlow.
Fred Fields.
Yes.
Clyde Caldwell.
Yeah. And cartographers, Rob Lazzaretti.
Diesel LaForce.
Yes.
Dave Sutherland, rest in peace. Dennis Koth, rest in peace.
Yes.
Who am I missing?
Yeah. Well, so you would go and talk. So the art direction.
Oh, and Todd. We eventually hired Todd.
And Todd Lockwood.
How could I forget Todd?
Yes, of course. right. So you had all these artists in house, and you had Peggy to go out and bring in art from mm-hmm. the outside. And you were in good company. At least you had great artists to work with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. 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 Yeah.
I mean, I think it's safe to say by the mid '90s, the art, the depth, the bench strength of TSR mm-hmm. in terms of art was second to none in the industry, right?
Correct.
I mean,
we
could do art like TSR could.
All heavy hitters on staff. So anything I was commissioning mm-hmm. was the interior right. illustrations.
Right.
Mm. Okay.
But all our covers were done by staff.
Yeah.
RK Post came on staff. Yes. Mm-hmm. Larry had already left by that point. And Keith had left by that point.
Do you remember any sort of like, I mean, who did you really like? Who was your favorite?
You know, honestly, we used to have a lot of fun. I mean, we really did.
Yeah.
We kind of refer to it as the golden years. We just, mm. we all worked together, and then hung out together. Just like all the time. Now, I mean, part of that might have been because we were in Lake Geneva and kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Limited options for other
things. But I mean, we played cards. We had a lot of fun. We had several assassin games.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That were.
Yeah.
that we had played. We thoroughly enjoyed each other's company, and it was a very special time.
I've had it described to me, you know, there's a lot of certainly TSR executive management has been criticized over the years for that, in that period, and also for getting the company into financial trouble. Mm. And but that the rank and file, the staff was really tight,
very,
very, very deep relationships.
Yeah.
That it was a good place to work in a lot of,
yeah,
in a lot of senses. It was a great,
yeah,
place
it was,
to work.
It was a great place to work. A group of us drove down to New Orleans 1 year for Mardi Gras.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, just for the weekend. Hmm. Long weekend. Road trip. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That,
yeah,
was fun.
Right.
It's a long drive.
That was Diesel. Diesel was in that party. Diesel and I also, with a couple other friends, road tripped out to the Black Hills.
Yeah.
One year, that which was a lot of fun.
So now, you know, as you know, we're broadcasting a show on Gen Con TV, and Gen Con was a big part of TSR back
before. We used to run it. Broken up.
I know. You, in
the
those
company
days,
shut down.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Like, the company shut down, and everybody went to Milwaukee, and you did something.
Right. What did you do? What was your job?
I worked in
Gen
the art
Con?
Show.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Bag check. Worked in the art show with Diesel.
Who's still, by the way,
who's still running the art show.
Art show.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I actually started in August. This has happened to me twice in my life. I started working in a movie theater the weekend Batman opened. Mm. The first Batman. So it was chaos. Absolute chaos that weekend. I started working at TSR like 2 weeks before Gen Con.
Oh, gosh.
These are our fans. By the way, 1992 is the first year I went to Gen Con.
So, oh, see?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But as a Wizard of the Coast, we had a tiny little booth. Nobody mm-hmm. knew who we were yet. We were just doing our role-playing lines. And we drove out to Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you what I miss. Gen Con is, now it is a huge trade show.
Yeah.
But,
consumer show. Huge consumer show.
A huge consumer show. Back then, it had more of a Ren Faire atmosphere to it.
Yeah.
You know, it really did. It was a lot more chill.
I remember the first time I went to Gen Con in 1992, mm-hmm. there was a choir, a medieval choir,
yeah.
that was singing, I think. Keith Strom was in it.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, maybe Sue Wineland
might have been in it. Yep, yeah, doing madrigals.
Yes, mm-hmm. and but it influenced me. I was like, wow, this is so cool. I'm at a game convention, and there's a choir, and they're singing madrigals. This is like awesome. So yeah, when we
they would hire minstrels.
We still do that at Gen Con. We have minstrels. We have choirs. We have
really?
People do music. Yeah, yeah. It's just a show so big that you got to go.
It's just so big.
Like Hurdy-Gurdy. I've seen Hurdy-Gurdy's there.
There you go. Yeah, we have the Pirates of...
It's gotten so big.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to... Okay. Anything you want to say about those days when things got tough? And the company got in trouble, and then it was
weird times. Like I said, Paul and I were just suddenly art directors, and artists weren't getting paid because the company was in financial straits.
Right.
And another thing different than from now. I used to talk on the phone with every single one of my artists, all of them,
yeah.
even if they were in the UK.
Right.
Now it's very rare.
Just email.
I don't even have a phone at my desk anymore.
You just send them emails?
It's all email. Yeah. Email. And any phone calls now route through the Microsoft system and are transcribed into email. It's crazy. Yeah. The volume that I'm working at now, I can't imagine having the time to talk to all my artists like I used to.
Right.
Used to call them up. And so, yeah, here's someone who's like, I've never art directed before. And like, you know,
where's my money?
Well, no, no, well, so there was that. Yeah, yeah. We were the first line of defense.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, some very angry.
Yeah. Sure.
Angry, angry people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's.
Yeah. It. So. Yeah. That. I. That was heartbreaking, because there was nothing I could do about it.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
It was, yeah, it was weird. I mean, we were just had no idea what was going to happen to the company.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I started, you know, looking for other jobs, you know, like in Madison and Milwaukee and Chicago. You know, I just started looking, and then.
From on high.
Here comes our knight in shining armor. Oh. You know, seriously. Done.
I wasn't trying to set you up for that, but thank you.
But, I mean, really, you know, and literally save the company.
So it was, I mean, so you were pretty happy with the new, I mean, you were content, like, the whole idea of being bought by a company in Seattle, moving to Seattle.
Well, I mean, that was, you know, we, you know, leaving all our friends and family behind, right? You know, at least we were moving out with a lot of friends, which helped.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, that camaraderie that used to exist in Lake Geneva, you know, and it's not like we live that far away from each other, but shit, Lori Brahm and I used to hit up antiques, flea markets and antique shops, you know, all the time. And now it's like once in a blue moon that we see each other. It's like, why did that happen?
Why is it so hard to get together with people?
I don't know.
We have email.
Todd isn't that far away, but, you know, it's like trying to, yeah, it's just.
We just, yeah.
I don't know, maybe because we're just older now and, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Life changes, you know.
Busy.
Everyone life just changes. Yeah, everyone's got, people are writing books and, you know, doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
I remember,
stuff.
Yeah, I have very fond memories of the 90s at the Wizard's office. Mm-hmm. And you could go down there at 2:00 in the morning, there'd be somebody there working, you know. It was all the time. It was a great energy about it.
Yep.
So you came out. You came out to Seattle.
Yeah, we took a week. We made a vacation out of it. Yeah. Wall drug.
Yes, wall drug on the
In 300 miles, 200 miles, 100 miles. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Was that South Dakota?
I actually got pulled over for speeding in wall drug.
Yeah. Because inside wall drug? Well, you know, it's off the freeway. You're supposed to slow down.
Yeah. But the parking lot, I was just going through the parking lot at like 10 miles an hour, but apparently there were posted signs that it is five miles an hour.
How can you even go that slow?
That's what I kind of asked, and the guy that pulled me over was not amused.
Not amused. Oh, my God. Okay, so you came out, and pretty quickly we started working on third edition D&D.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you, like, I have a story. I remember a conversation I had with you.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you're going to remember it or not. I remember a conversation I had with you. Well, first of all, I had a great time meeting Rob Lazzarotti and Dennis Kauth and learning how to make maps.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you remember. When I was out in Lake Geneva, I spent like a whole day with them once, and they taught me all about making maps. And so I got really excited to make maps. So I made my own D&D map. And they were a lot better than the maps I'd made before that.
I was going to say, I'm sure yours was adorable.
Well, I came and showed one of the maps to you. And I said, hey, Don, look at the map I made. And I knew that I was just kind of being a dick by doing that. You know, I have a mischievous.
Yes, yes.
I have a mischievous side of me. Like, yeah.
It's so, like, are you going to use that?
What do you think of my map? I told you that Rob and Dennis had taught me my stuff. And you looked at it, and I could just see the, like,
the wheels,
like, how do I phrase this? And you looked at me and said, well, we've published maps worse than this. Yes, you did. We've published maps worse than this.
Wow.
And I thought that was very clever. That's a great compliment, but it's not saying you want to publish my map. It's just. I've been waiting to tell that one. You don't remember that moment.
No, I do not. Oh my God. And you still hired me.
You were already hired. I knew I could tease you with that. Do you remember any stories of moving to Seattle or moving into the office, like meeting people that you end up working with, like Richard Garfield or, you know, something?
You know, I really did not interact with Richard because when I was one of the last people to come.
That's right. We weren't sure about you.
Well, no, because all those files. Yeah. Tom Wannerstrand came to Lake Geneva.
Right.
And he and
I
were...
The artists were the last ones to come out.
Yeah. And he and I were... Dana came out months before I did to work on C23.
Okay. We wouldn't... Yeah, okay. That, yeah. Yeah, that was a trading card game.
I was like, what was the name of that? So Tom and I were like going through all the files trying to establish what stage of production were they in. Did they, you know, have the files already been sent to the vendor? You know, were they already prepped? Are they ready to go? You know, and then making a priority list of like, you know, what's going to print and what isn't, you know, because Keenahan had been holding all the files hostage.
Right. Mm. So Keenahan, in case you missed a previous episode with Ryan Dancy, went into some depth on this about how the they were your printer and warehouser, right? And they had all the proofs that were the four.
They would print. They were the ones that were printing the games. Yeah.
Yeah. To print. And so
printing the modules.
One of the challenges that TSR had was that when they had a debt to Keenahan that they couldn't pay, they couldn't just take the proofs, or take the color separations, and go to a different printer because the printer had them.
The printer had them.
Yeah. And wouldn't release them.
Yeah, so there were several months that we were making products and sending it to the vendor and nothing was happening with it.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not like nowadays where everything is in Dropbox and you can do it. You can just go to Washington and do it. It's like you have to be there with the computer.
Well, but see, we owed them money.
Yes.
That is why they were holding the files hostage.
Yep. So you came out. Let's go to third edition D&D. What? Because I know that you led that whole effort.
Wow. That was a huge undertaking. It was just time, you know, for D&D to get a facelift. Mm-hmm. You know, and at that time too, video games were starting to become what I felt. Was becoming one of our clunk.
Yeah, if you take that microphone and just shake it a little bit, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Scratch, scratch, scratch.
Yeah. But you say a facelift, like.
Because what I felt was becoming our biggest competitor at the time was video games, mm-hmm. and video games were looking really slick.
Right.
You know, and D&D was starting to look a little, you know, just. A little dated.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it needed some new life breathed.
Yes.
Breathed into it.
Yes. Don, we want you to breathe some new life into this.
Breathe some new life into this.
Yes.
Not everybody agreed with that. I'm very thankful that I had Todd and Sam in my corner on that because I'm not sure it would have happened.
What's sort of the nature of what that disagreement was? Like what's the counter argument to doing that? Like
because that's what people knew. Yeah. Because it was familiar. Right. Because you know it's just the way it's always been. And why should we change it?
My
argument was we are in the realm of fantasy, mm-hmm. so why does everything need to look so perfectly, you know, referenced from historical, medieval, real world tropes and designs? Yeah. You know, why, you know, it should be, you know, elevated beyond that into the fantastical.
Right.
And, you know.
Can you think of any piece of art from back, like any... Well, Todd and I'll help you out this way. Todd and I were talking about this, mm-hmm. and I mentioned that it really hit me when I saw the character design for Lita, the halfling mm-hmm. rogue. Mm-hmm. And, like, like a lot of art from prior generation, which, by the way, I love a lot of the art.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking that's come before. But if it was, we wouldn't be here.
Right.
Yeah.
It was wonderful, beautiful art. Yeah. But it was kind of idealized in a sense.
Yeah.
So you'd see an adventurer.
Yeah.
And its adventurer has their sword or their staff. But, you know, what about the backpack and all the different,
all the stuff.
And I remember seeing Lydda, and she's got all these tools, she's got mm-hmm. these pouches, and she's like all, like ready to really, you know.
A wizard would also have a lot of pouches for all their little spell components versus a sorcerer that doesn't need spells components and mm-hmm. super high charisma so they can, you know, be a little more flamboyant maybe in their costuming and, mm-hmm. you know, charismatic. You know, that was probably the closest thing to a concept push, really, because Todd was also working out, you know, new sort of anatomical studies for dragon anatomy.
Oh, that's an amazing sentence.
He was clear to Todd. Yeah, Todd loves dragons.
Yeah,
he loves dragons.
Yeah. I mean, that they're just so, you know, that's just like one of the best things to come out of third edition. Mm. You know, and just, yeah, given the armor designs, you know, just, you know, to be honest, you know, Planescape already sort of ventured into that world a little bit. It was just like, whoa.
Planescape has
way out of nowhere,
some
you know.
Wonderful edgy stuff.
Completely
well, it had that
different.
Deep lazy sort of style and.
But Zeb said to Dana and Rob, "I want it to be spiky, bumpy."
Spiky, bumpy,
and that
brilliant, really, and that's brilliant. I mean, you could say something like that to artists. Mm. It sounds, I mean, it might sound kind of dorky to us, but to artists, they're going like, "Oh, spiky and bumpy, okay," and you're going to get all this crazy stuff, right?
And everybody just ran with it, you know. You know, the all the cartography, you know, was just a little grittier and, you know, more contemporary in design instead of like the old parched, you know, parchment. So it already was exploring those edges of, you know. How far can we push this? You know, where people are still going to be okay with it. And I mean, people love Planescape. Planescape is awesome.
Yeah.
It really is. It holds up. It's so cool.
Yeah.
I recently saw a woman doing cosplay of the Lady of Pain, and it was awesome.
Yes.
It was absolutely awesome. So, third edition, was kind of like probably the closest thing D&D had ever had to a concept push. With, you know, just reimagining what some of these things look like, you know, how can costume design really reflect the job mm-hmm. of the character.
Right. And the covers, like instead of fine art, it was a graphic design on the covers of all the core books.
Right. And talk about old tone though. But I don't know. I just kind of was in that. It was a trompe l'oeil thing, you know, that was kind of, you know, popular back then, at least.
Yeah, I thought it worked well. It was a bold decision, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Henry did some amazing covers.
Henry
Higginbotham did those sculpted covers. And when
we 3. We're talking about the Player's Handbook, the
Player's DMG, and the Monster Manual, the three core books. Yeah. And then when 3.5, they wanted similar but different, I just went back to Henry. I was like, if you had a chance to do it all over again,
yes.
You know,
what would you do?
What would you do with it now? And and he just like upped him up, you know, a couple notches. Mm. And he does some really cool, like the Book of Psionics is one of my favorites, sculpted covers that he did, and the Book of Exalted Deeds is a real pretty one. He would just send these structures, you know, that those marbles are lit up because he rigged up this frame that backlit for us to take the photograph of this, Book of Vile Darkness and Book of Exalted Deeds were the two companion ones. Book of Vile Darkness had the danger, danger, you know, mature audience sticker on it.
Right. Yeah. Were you as excited as I was to bring back Demons and Devils?
Yeah.
You're not as excited. You're very excited.
I was very excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, again, but you know, the pendulum swings. You know, for right. a while, D&D was, you know, devil worship game.
You know,
and honestly, I'm like, if I could open this player's handbook and just cast any of these spells, right. do you think I would just be... working some job, living, you know, what do you think? You think I'd be driving to work and not riding my own dragon?
Yeah.
What?
You think I would make a flaming sphere on top of you right now?
I was one of those kids who was told I couldn't play Dungeons and Dragons at school anymore, right?
See?
I was banned from campus because of me. It got banned from the school, and I got called in and was talking, and the counselor was explaining to me and my friend Larry how this was a demon worship, and there was one kid who cast a spell, and he disappeared, and my friend goes, yeah, well, it's invisibility, it's a second level spell.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, we just, yeah.
But the kid that got, you know, died in the steam tunnels.
Yeah, it turned out.
You know,
out
it never happened. He just went away for the weekend. He came
away.
Back, and but that didn't make news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So internally, you were saying that there was some pushback here. When the third edition hit the market and the players saw it, what was the general reaction to the changes?
I think people liked it. Some of the feedback that stands out is from women who were grateful to see, Tony's tiefling was super curvy, you know, instead of these constant waif-like high-heeled shoes, you know, like, no, there's no way you're lifting that broadsword.
Yeah.
You know, right? You know, just trying to bring a sense of realism into it. So, you know, the monk, you know, she was ripped.
Nice.
You know, right. Nice and tight.
Yeah.
You know, and just trying to explore some different body types. I will say, Tony's tiefling, I remember there were some nasty comments too, like, you know, since when we start putting fat chicks, you know, it's like, really? You know, the trolls.
Yeah.
The trolls got a troll.
Yeah. I know, trolls.
It's like, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that was, that kind of feedback was particularly poignant.
I could tell you, you're playing it down. The art was a big hit. Third edition art was great. It was fantastic. It was a big hit.
I like it.
People loved it. Mm. Yeah. Well, you're being modest.
Yeah.
Can't say, but I can tell you, I was in the front lines. I was out playing D&D with everybody and talking on the internets with people, and everybody loved it. It was we did a good job with the art. And again, like you said, we're all big fans of the earlier art too, for sure. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of wonderful art. But I think we did something.
Everything evolves.
I think.
You know, whereas, you know, D&D now, you know, looks different than third edition.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
sure.
know, and in another 10 years,
it's
you know, everything evolves.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it has to.
But you, Don, you know, you did a fantastic job.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you did. You did. You put together the team for that art. You worked with them, and you got great work out of them, and a great concept for where the art should go. You didn't get any help from me on it. I didn't. I mean, I just come by and say
you didn't hurt.
That, well, sometimes it's the best thing you can do is just stay the hell out of the way, right?
Yeah. Which is what happened with Planescape. Lorraine was just like, oh, whatever.
Right.
She was so focused on Heroes Quest and Wild Space, those video games, that we just kind of made Planescape without any meddling,
right?
Which is rare, super rare. Valve gets to do it now, but
well done. I gotta say, you were always fun to work with it. I remember, like, you always had a big smile on your face. You always had a lot of energy. You're always smart. You always knew. You always had the answer. You always knew what was going on. This is what my memory is
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I have been told sometimes I am too intense, and people are afraid to work with me. So.
Well, you know, a little fear is good. I used to have a business partner for Jenga. I don't know if you ever knew Adrienne Swartout.
Oh, yeah. I remember Adrienne.
She was my business partner here. Yeah. Now Dave Hoppe is doing it now. Uh-huh. And he's great. He's fantastic. But Adrienne.
She used to have some great parties.
Oh, yeah. She still does. She just says, yes, I run the company with an iron fist and a velvet glove.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, so let's go to what have you done since then? Like so you're still at Wizards of the Coast, right? Have you been there continuously since 1997?
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's 23 years.
Almost 30.
Mm. Well, yes, counting all the TSR time. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Must
have started when
Who
you
does
were
that
like
anymore?
6.
I was in my 20s. I was young.
Yeah.
I was young. One day.
So what are you doing at Wizards now?
So now I am on the Magic Creative World Building team.
So you're working on Magic the Gathering.
I am working on Magic the Gathering now.
What happened? Did you get tired of D&D?
So I had worked on D&D for second edition, third edition, 3.5. And then, you know, shortly after 3.5, they're wanting to give D&D another facelift. And I was like, I don't know if I have this in me anymore. You know, I've kind of put everything into it. And, you know, I'm not so sure I'm the right person to do this because it was so close to me at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure I could separate myself emotionally. And so at that time, Hecatomb was the new card game that Wizards was working on. It needed an art director, and I was like, I'll do that.
Right.
You know, modern contemporary horror. You know, I keep forgetting that third edition, but I also worked on, you know, Dark Matter, which I'm also really proud of.
Sure.
I think looks awesome.
You probably worked on Alternity.
Alternity a little bit. Paul worked on that more.
Okay.
But I worked on Alternity a little bit. Dark Matter was under the Alternity umbrella.
Right. These are role-playing games.
Role-playing games,
TSR,
yeah. Dark Matter was kind of X-Files-ish. So that was a lot of fun to just work with different kinds of artists and, you know, more contemporary themes.
Right.
I worked on the Call of Cthulhu RPG we did with Chaosium, the D20 one.
Yes.
That was cool. That was fun.
Oh, that would be, I mean, Cthulhu. any branch of publishing, you'd be happy to work on that, right?
I mean, I've been at the company for a long time, but in all that time, I've been lucky in that I've, you know, Oriental Adventures, you know, was a really fun one to work on with James Wyatt. You know, I've had a lot of opportunities to keep learning new things. Right. You know, I worked on the novels, you know, all those novel series.
Sure.
You know, then there was Hecatomb, which were these plastic, five-sided plastic cards that stacked, you know, and gave you variant rules.
Right.
But the art was all, again, you know, just like sort of modern horror. So I got to just work on something completely different again.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And then it didn't do well in the market, you know, for one, it was super expensive to produce because petroleum was going up and plastic is made from petroleum. So this is an expensive card game to produce. Yeah. And so then I worked on some Japanese brands
Oh, did you work on Duel Masters?
I worked on Duel Masters. Prior to that, I worked on Charm Angel,
okay,
which was with the collectible charm. So I learned a lot of manufacturing stuff about, tooling and, arguing with Japan team because they wanted sharp, pointy arrows. And we're like, no, Hasbro safety standards. You know, Yuki and I like scratching our wrists with the charms. Like, could a child cut themselves with this? You know?
Oh my God! I live with this. My I don't know if you. My wife works in corporate compliance and product safety.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
yeah. So this is a common conversation in our home. Like,
see,
one of the first things she gave me was a choking hazard tube. You know, one of those things. If it can fit through the tube, then it's a choking hazard.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, see. Yeah. So learned a lot of manufacturing stuff, and then Duel Masters, which was. Just, wow, whole nother ball of wax, you know, working with three different Japanese partners, you know, that all owned a part of the property, you know, the television show, the manga, the, you know, the rules, you know, our distributor. So, you know, I got to go to Japan, which was super cool. But that was a completely different experience working with... Japanese business is,
So how'd you get on the Magic team? When did that happen? When did you start working on Magic?
So I was working on Duel Masters, and the art director at the time, Jeremy Jarvis, asked me if I could help him commission some work because he was just buried. And I was like, yeah, sure, I got time. And so he gave me about 30 pieces for... Plane Chase 2. Yeah.
Okay.
30 pieces for Plane Chase 2 to commission.
I don't know the line.
That was like in 2012.
Right.
I, you know, worked with him and the Magic team to commission that art. Now, in hindsight, I almost wonder if that was almost like a long-term tryout. You know, to seriously, to see how I would do. Because then I was with some friends. We were over in Wenatchee. And
there's near Milwaukee. It's kind of on the way to Milwaukee.
On the way to Milwaukee, we were in Wenatchee. And Jeremy called me and asked me if I was interested in working on the Magic team. And I was like, I'm like, let me think about this, you know, because, there's every, you know, there were challenges.
Yeah.
Sure. I thought about it. Actually, I went to, this is so dumb.
Oh, good. We love it when the story starts off this
way. Well, it's just weird. It's just one of those weird like things.
Perfect.
So Seattle Center, all the buildings around Seattle Center, like, will oftentimes have different art shows in them, you know, over like by where KXP used to be. We were walking through one of those buildings where there was just, you know, some local art exhibit, and there was a table that just had a bunch of tarot cards, face down, and it said, pick one, you know? And so I did. I picked one, and it was the Magician. And so I was like, okay.
So you took the job.
It tipped the scales a little.
Yeah. Nice. Good.
Love it.
Good. So that's what you're doing now. You're on the Magic team.
Mm-hmm.
So we're almost out of time. So tell what's that like? What do you do on the Magic team?
Oh, wow. Being one of the art directors, we commission all of the beautiful artwork you see on the cards.
Yeah.
And we're the visual leads when it comes time to design a new world.
Right.
So the Return to Theros, I was the lead on that one, and we introduced the Underworlds this time, and the Minotaur City, you know, to give new something new for the fans from Last Theros.
Right.
I was also art lead on the Unstable, the last Silver Border set.
Yeah.
which was so wackadoo. Oh my God. Yeah, that was so wackadoo.
Like the split cards.
Yeah, and the contraptions. But I had already done that in Duel Masters because Japan teams always want to do something crazy. And so we had already done like connector cards that pieced together to make one big card. So I had already done that, but now it was like, now I had five artists create. Oh my God. And if you have not seen just the artwork without any of the rules text on top of it, of those contraptions, when all nine cards are put together to make one big piece, they are amazing.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
Do you get to work with any of the artists that you worked with back in the 90s?
Some, yeah. Yeah, a few.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a lot of people come and go, you know.
Yeah.
It's, I will say, this is the hardest job I've ever done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Is it because of how much art you have to do, or too many masters, or
it's there's just a lot of pressure to do a lot.
Yeah.
And we're the company is really growing now too, so we're doing more now than we were three years ago.
You didn't have time to take my call.
Call, I'll have my people call your people.
It's like, that's okay. Just come over. We'll wing it. All right. Well, we are, I just got to ask you before we go, like when you think back, you know, think back over to your amazing career, it's still going on, you know, over at TSR Wizards. What have you taken with you from all this? What do you reflect back on and think?
I am resilient.
Resilient.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the last person from TSR at Wizards.
You are. Wow. Oh my gosh. Huh.
Wow.
I am the cheese stands alone. I am the last.
The cheese
stands alone. I am the last TSR employee.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because just to think about, like, how much the company has changed, how much Wizards has changed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, since Hasbro bought us.
Mm. Yeah. Well, thanks for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This was super fun.
Yeah.
It's so fun to see you.
I hope you enjoyed today's new episode of Fireside with Peter Adkisson. If you want to catch the show live, be sure to tune in every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/GenConTV. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date on all the Fireside podcast happenings. We will be back every Monday with a classic episode of Fireside covering the history of Magic the Gathering, and every Friday with a new episode of Fireside Dungeons & Dragons. Again, I've been Marcus from GenConTV. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you soon.